Mr. David Butt.
Reel 9.
Now, what did they do while you were on this NATO posting at the headquarters at Floriana? This is from November 54 onwards. Mm-hmm. What was your actual role when you went into the headquarters in this office room?
Well, I mean, it was completely different in as much as it was purely signal office work, i.e. you're receiving signals by teleprinter, tape relay, and very, very occasionally you'd have to read light signals from the main signal station across the harbour. But we weren't involved in that. It might just be that you'd read these signals because it might entail something to do with NATO. But that wasn't really much involvement in that at all. It was purely office work, if you like. It was signals to and from crypto. But again, that was primarily specialist people. We were cosmic cleared, which was a very high.
What is that, cosmic cleared?
Cosmic, yeah. It's cosmic top secret, which is higher than top secret, apparently. And it's a NATO classification for clearance of, look into your whole background, etc., and make sure you've got nothing. No niggers in the woodpile from the point of view of communists and the like. So we were entitled to read practically any signal which was passed through NATO, unless it was highly encrypted. If it was a cosmic signal, it would be the most sensitive signal of the world. You could be involved in the cipher work on that. You could read it. You're entitled to read it. But generally, there was a lot of plain language signals flying backwards and forwards between NATO headquarters around the world or around the NATO area and other links with the states, etc., etc. And also with the Navy, a lot of naval signals, of course, would be copied to Mountbatten in particular, because he was CNC Mediterranean as well as CNC Allied Forces.
And was he there at Malta, or was he back in?
He was there a lot of the time, not all the time. But that was his base as CNC Mediterranean and CNC Allied Forces.
Did you actually see him or enough to get an impression of? What do you think of Mr. CNC?
I think he was a fantastic person. He was very down to earth, very likeable. He was, I think, probably what you would look to find in a senior naval officer, if you had a preference. You obviously knew everything that was going on. He was interested in everything that was going on, and he was interested in people.
So he'd actually speak to you signalers?
Oh, yeah, he would speak. If you happened to see him, he was on a different floor to us. Of course, the signal office was on one floor, and his office was up right up the top, I believe. It's only about a 4 or 5 story block. And he had his own staff there. We were more concerned with NATO signalling rather than the pure naval stuff. Pure naval signalling wouldn't actually come into us necessarily. It would go to Lascaris, which was the main signal office, which is still empty to this day, as far as I know. We wouldn't see a lot of him, but obviously we had the odd inspection here and there. Parade, we did get involved in parade sometimes. Apart from, when we did the watch system again, but not 4-hourly watch, we did day and night, basically. You either watch all day or you watch all night. And you had to generally stay awake. We had a chief yeoman, but he was normally during the day. He was Italian, quite a comical fella. He used to like his snacks. He used to bring out every now and again for some unknown celebration. We had a Greek yeoman who wasn't that likeable, to be honest, and we always felt he was a bit dodgy. We didn't trust him. He again, he was mainly during the day. And then we had the senior watch, it could be a leading hand, or I think in most cases, I think it was always a leading hand. I don't think we had a yeoman on the watches. And then the staff, which was two signalmen and one or two, two wrens, I think, generally. And it was, let's say, teleprinters and radio to a minor degree, but a lot of typing out the signals and sending them wherever. So really, that was our duties. And when we were off duty, we were 100% off, basically. Do whatever you like.
What would you do? What was it, a good posting for recreations, Malta?
Oh yes, it was brilliant. I mean, it really was a cushy number. I mean, you couldn't get a better number in the Navy, I'm sure. Although some people did say that, you could get posted to NATO headquarters, for instance, in Norfolk, Virginia, and these sort of places where they said it was absolutely fantastic. But other than that, I don't think you could fault it.
So this is a pleasant, but not much happened. Was there anything happened that you recall?
No, not really. Nothing specific happened at all. It was a fairly quiet period.
And that was through to April 56.
That's right. Yeah, we did some. I mean, the busiest periods there was some NATO exercises. When it was controlled basically by Mountbatten. And there were signals flying all over the place then. But again, it was the same sort of work, but just a lot busier. There was nothing out of the ordinary happened at all.
So what was your next post? It looks like it's HMS Mercury, the signal training school.
Yeah,
that's Petersfield, isn't it?
That's right. I went for a leading hands course then. I'd applied for leading hands course probably while I was in Malta. There were always waiting lists for both for courses and for the actual promotion itself. In those days, long waiting lists. So I can't remember how long I was waiting for the course, but yeah, I mean, I did the full 18 months in Malta. And then was sent to Mercury for the leading hands course, I think.
That seems to have been until August. Now, what do you remember of that course? How much more detail was it? Or was it just revision?
You learn everything in more detail. A lot of it's revision, of course. I make sure you've remembered everything you were originally taught at Ganges. But a lot of it is in more detail, and you should be more capable, particularly on things like the fleet work side, where you should be far more capable as a senior rating to get involved in the fleet work side of it. It was generally just in more depth, and partly, of course, leadership. That came into it quite a lot. That was part of the reason for moving up the ladder. You were then going to be in charge of somebody or other, or a group, or whatever. It was disciplined again to a degree, but not rigid discipline. You were there basically to learn something, and naval pomp and circumstance wasn't part of it. You still had your Sunday divisions and your church service, things like this. But other than that, you were left to your own devices, out of hours.
Now the next thing's an unusual posting. That's in August 56 to HMS Reward. Now, yeah. Let's leave it to you to describe what HMS Reward was.
Well, HMS Reward. And again, I've got photos here, not a lot, but some. But it's the only tug in the Navy at the time, the only actual towing tug in the Navy. Navy used otherwise Royal Fleet Auxiliary tugs for all other things. And I don't mean the sort of tugs you use in shunting ships around harbours. This was a much larger, much more powerful ship.
So quite a big ship, or?
No, not very big at all. I forget the weight now, but I think there were only about 24 crew, something like that. We actually had bunks on there, twin bunks. Because I would imagine it was probably originally a merchant tug, I don't know, rather than a naval tug. But the Navy decided, for reasons of their own, that they actually wanted a tug which was pure Navy and not the auxiliary. But yeah, I mean, the duties of reward, I mean, I found it very odd going on there, and there was only one. Two signal staff on there. One visual on one radio. I found out that the fella that was on before me actually got thrown off for some reason. I don't know what he'd done, but he was thrown off. So I got no turnover whatsoever. He came off as I walked on, sort of thing.
Now, you're not a leader. Although you've done the course, you're still a signal.
I'm still a signal.
Ordinary or able?
Able.
You changed over in the previous
year. Yeah, that's just an automatic process as you go through. I think it was at 18 or something.
So what were your duties like?
Basically you did everything you would do on any other ship within reason, i.e. within your capabilities of one person being on board. Able to do it. The ship's duties themselves were target towing was a large part of it, and again for the home fleet, and this is why I say this is part of the home fleet's duties, were firing at target, and the target is a large 300-ton float, basically towed behind about 1,000 yards behind with a big wicker work. Strong wicker work framework on top, which you could put canvas down to make it more solid, etc., if necessary. So a lot of the duties were towing that around for ships to fire at. Otherwise, it was towing whatever might need towing.
Well, let's look at this towing gunnery practice towers. That seems to have given you quite a bit of fun. Fun's probably not the right word. It was anybody. Was it just the Royal Navy, or was it everybody?
It was mainly the Royal Navy, but you did get occasionally foreign ships if they were over for an exercise with the home fleet. You might get the odd foreign ones, which would be included in the target practice. Yeah. It was only fun in as much as it was quite comical sometimes to see the way they were shooting. But, they did get better. But, if they were training new gunnery crews or new ships that had only just come into service or whatever, and they weren't really. Because they have, at Portland, there's what's called a workup depot, which basically all ships, when their commission go through, and target practice is one of the areas, of course, that everybody has to do, and of course that's where we were involved as a tug. We were towing them, so we could do a maximum of about 12 knots, I think. So we were towing the targets, and the ships were just firing at it, and it wasn't uncommon for them to get fairly close. And as I say, beforehand, I was told that the shell had gone right through the hull.
In your time or later?
No, prior to. Funnily enough, the reward was eventually sunk, and there was very little said about it, and I've never got to the bottom of it. It was sunk after, a few years after I left.
So you'd be... What else were you doing?
It was towing anything that the Navy decided what it took, i.e. partly as exercise, i.e. you had to pick up a tow, for instance, we had to tow HMS Swiftsure, which was a fairly heavy cruiser. You had to pick up a tow from the Swiftsure, who was dead in the water, and see how quickly you could get it up to maximum speed, and tow it at maximum speed, and this type of thing. That was just exercises. But we used to tow floating docks around from one port to another, for instance, and so they were completely unmanoeuvrable, just massive big, you know, basically just two sides and a bottom, that's all they were. You did have to put a towing crew on board, which was a couple from off the tug, from the Reward. They used to go on board just to basically check that the tow was secure and safe. Nothing else they could do. They did, if necessary, take a hot voice signal and that sort of thing. No signal went on there because we didn't know anybody else. So we used to tow those around from one place to another, which was a long-winded, boring job, basically.
I mean, there's a story here. You got into a storm once towing a floating dock.
Well, that was at the end of Land's End. Yeah, we would take it, I think, from Devonport. I can't remember. We were going up the West Coast. I mean, we may have been going over to Londonderry, Northern Ireland. But yeah, I mean, I was on watch on the first watch at 8 o'clock in the evening, and we were just off Land's End, and it was quite rough and windy, very windy. And we were towing at full power, and I went on off watch at midnight, and you couldn't see the tow really anyway then, it was pitch black. And I came back on watch the following morning at 8 o'clock. And we were still off Land's End, towing at full power. It just didn't move. I mean, the tide and the wind were so strong. We were managing to hold our own, that was all. Which was fortuitous, because if they were getting dragged backwards, they would have to turn around go into sheltered water somewhere. But no, they managed to keep on, basically on level par until this storm subsided a bit, and then it's carried on. You know. But yeah, I mean, that's how difficult they were to tow those things. Yeah, that was partly our main tow was collecting the Vanguard from Gibraltar.
Tell us about that, because before you even got there, there's quite a story. The journey out to Gibraltar.
That was hilarious. We came out from Portland. We'd been doing target tying from Portland. And we were told we'd have to go to Gibraltar as supervising tug for towing the Vanguard, HMS Vanguard battleship, back to Scotland to be cut up for razor blades and whatever. So we left Portland in the morning, and we just nosed around Portlandville, and it's often rough around there anyway, but it really was rough, and we just put our nose around the corner, and this massive wave just swamped the ship. Not very big, the ship itself, and it went right over the funnel down. They had the galley. It was a galley funnel. It had a T-piece funnel, but the water still managed to get down, and it just blew the galley stove. You know, it didn't blow the stove itself apart, but it blew the works, you know, just out. And so the chef was in the galley at the time, getting the lunch ready, I suppose, for dinner. And it just covered everything in black, oily soot, including him. And it really did look funny. My mess, because I actually messed with the chef, as it happened. Well, not messed with, but in the cabin. I shared the cabin with the chef. And so the chef was... The cabin was right opposite the galley, you know, and I heard this. I couldn't have been on watch at the time or on top. And I heard this noise, and I opened the cabin door, and that's when he came out of the galley, you know, just completely covered in oily soot. Because I laughed, and anybody else that was around came round. I mean, he didn't look very happy, that's for sure. And when I looked in the mess, it was... in the galley, it was absolutely diabolical. But not only that, it had come down, the water had actually come down all the lower mastics and all the mastics were swimming about 6 inches. They had the usual 6 inches, about 6 inches of coving around the doorways, and the water was up to the level of that, and sort of level, it found its own level, and then it was just sloshing about all over the place.
Did you get rid of it?
Well, you could get rid of it bit by bit. You had to sort of shovel it out of the mess until you get to where you could find a drainage point. But because we were below upper deck, it was very difficult. So basically it was getting rid of it as far as we could and then mopping up. But basically we didn't bother because it was rough all the way there and the water was just keep coming in. So, but a hell of a lot of fellows were seasick on that, and they were very experienced seamen on there, naturally being a tug. It was a specialist job. We had a couple of ex-merchant naval fellows on there. They're in the Navy, but they served a period in the merchant Navy on tugs, I think. And so they had the expertise. But apart from the fact they were very experienced people, a lot of them were seasick as well. And very few were worried about the galley being out of action because they didn't
want to eat. It was out of action.
It was completely out of action, yeah. They just didn't want to eat at all. So luckily the hot water boiler was still going, which was separate from the main boiler. And basically that's what we lived on, the soup and tea and stuff and ham ship's biscuits. And we lived, although it was rough, it wasn't necessarily raining all the time, and you get the spray that you could keep out the spray in certain parts. So we spent most of the time on the upper deck because water was just slopping around anyway. In the bunks themselves were dry because they were off the floor, off the deck anyway. But the rest of the ship below,
how deep?
It was up to the level of the door lintel. You know,
six or 7 inches.
It was about 6 inches, and then it would slop over the top. It'd go down a bit, and then get some more waves over it, it'd top up again. There was never any great danger because it was a very seaworthy vessel, but it was very flat bottom. That was the thing, being a tug, so it could go in shallow waters, and it just used to get thrown about all over the place.
You used the towing ropes for an unusual purpose. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, they had what was called a 20-inch. I mean, all the ropes that are measured by the actual diameter, circumference, sorry. And 20 inches is actually 20 inches around the rope, so it's about that thick.
About 6 inches diameter.
A good 6 inches, I would think, yeah. And they used to coil it down, you know, on top, so that it was hollow in the middle, because you couldn't do it that tight anyway, so it was just coiled around on the towing deck. And it was sheltered in there, so, you know, the four or five of us that were up and about all the time, we just used to go and sit in the middle of it, you know. And
there's a windbreak.
Yeah, it's a windbreak, basically, yeah. As I say, we got the spray, but it wasn't raining that much. It was, rain sometimes, some of the time, but mainly it was just rough weather, rough seas and high winds. So we sat in it, you know, just somewhere different to sit, and rather than slopping about in water down below.
Did you ever have a rope break in towing, because it sounds like a hell of a weight on some of these.
Yeah, well, logically, no. I mean, I don't think we did while I was... While
they
I
were
was
rope, on. Were they? All steel
no,
cable?
No, wire. Normally steel cable, yeah. I mean, it's the same as I was explaining yesterday on you would start with the old throwing the rope to get the cable, and then you'd get the bigger cable, and on rare occasions, like when we towed the Swiftshore, for instance, you used the 20-inch rope, and that is rope.
Swiftshore was an old battleship.
The cruiser, the Swiftshore, yeah. And that was just really an exercise to see how quickly you could take the tow.
What about towing the Vanguard? I mean, how did that go?
Well, the Vanguard, when we eventually got to Gibraltar in a bit of a mess, we sat there for a while. I think we had a few days before the tow was due, and I think the tow was delayed. Not too sure why. It was something to do with the Vanguard itself, why they couldn't get her out of the dock. And we had a few days there, and funnily enough, the Britannia was actually in Gibraltar at the time, which is, while I was on the Reward, I got the promotion, from leading up to leading signalman, and should have been sent off then, because they weren't entitled to a leading hand on a small ship like that. So I thought, oh good, I'll get off this pressure thing, and get drafted somewhere else. And unfortunately, the skipper said, your promotion's come through, of course. He said, and I have actually requested the drafting office to leave you on board. I said, thank you very much.
You didn't say anything, though.
I said, I was hoping actually that I'd get redrafted. He said, well, don't you like it on here? I said, it's not that I don't like it on here. I said, but it's not really, much to do in my field. We get the odd exercise where I'm involved in signals and that, but a lot of the stuff like just towing, like coming up to Gibraltar and things like that, you're not in any company whatsoever. There's just nothing basically to do, apart from cleaning and the like. So, but he said, unfortunately, he said, I've decided that I want to keep you on here, and that's the way it's going to be. So that was it. But yeah, so we got to Gibraltar, and we just had to wait for the Vanguard to be ready to tow.
Now, while you were there, you met someone from the Britannia.
That's right.
This is not for now, but you might as well tell the story now, because he persuaded you to apply.
I forget how I knew, but I knew he was on the Britannia. And he was the same fellow I was talking about on the Ain that was constantly seasick. He was a telegraphist at the time, not visual signals. And so I phoned through, because you get connected up to shore phones normally when you get onto a dock. And I phoned through to Britannia and asked if he was there, and they put me through, and I spoke to him, and we just arranged a run ashore. And it's really went from there. We were just chatting about it, and he said, I think the ship you're on is a bit different to what I'm on at the moment. I said, you could say that. He said, it's fantastic on the Britannia. He said, you're still doing the same work. He said, basically, you're still doing the same signal duties and that, with variations depending on the company you're in, etc., and where you are. He said, why don't you volunteer? Because it was, in those days, it was all volunteers, and it was, again, a waiting list. And I said, what's so special about it? He said, the places we go, he says, are fantastic. You'll never go on a naval ship unless you happen to be escorting the yacht at the time. And he said, it's just, a pleasant routine because of the way it's run. And he just went into a few detail on that. So I thought, why not, So I actually put a request in the next day to be recommended. And the skipper, of course, said, what do you want to go on there for, etc. I said, well, it's going to be a bit different from this. He said, well, it could be, couldn't it? But he said, oh, fair enough. He said, hold on. I'll recommend you.
You still had about six more months before you came through.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I stayed on there because I knew there would be a waiting. Well, you had to be again vetted, but I think possibly because I'd been NATO, that side of the vetting had all been done, and so that was maybe helpful. And of course, they have to look into your general character and everything else. You're not going to upset anything. I just forgot about it basically after that, because I knew it was going to take a time.